Actors Talk Podcast, Episode 18. Yes, indeed. Hello, friends, and welcome to Episode 18 of Actors Talk with me. I am Tommy G. Kendrick, the producer and host of this podcast, coming to you from the beautiful city of Round Rock, Texas. If you're wondering where that is, we're just up Interstate 35 north of Austin, Texas, which is not only the self-appointed live music capital of the world, but it is also a veritable hotbed of independent filmmaking. The mission, if you will, of Actors Talk is to bring you, the listener, interesting, informative, and hopefully entertaining content that will be of service to you on your journey as a professional actor or other creative individual involved in or hoping to become involved in the movie business. The Austin area is home to a lot of great independent filmmakers, such stalwarts as Robert Rodriguez and Richard Linklater. Richard Linklater, whose latest film, Bernie, starring Jack Black, Shirley MacLaine, Matthew McConaughey, appears to be winding down its very successful theatrical run. And I'm happy to say yours truly has a little bit of work in that project. I think the film Bernie may soon offer an interesting case study on how a very careful, limited theatrical release combined with a slow rollout to a modest number of theater screens, maximizing word-of-mouth advertising to a very effective, successful theatrical run that should, I think, nicely fuel all the ancillary income streams available, DVD sales, Redbox, VOD, iTunes, Netflix, streaming, and of course availability on cable and satellite systems. I think, if I remember correctly, Bernie was in just over 300 screens at its widest release, at least so far, according to boxofficemojo.com. That's a great site if you don't know about it. I'm sure a lot of you do. According to that same source, Bernie is currently in 166 screens, and the box office gross as of the last day or so, I believe, was just over $7 million. Now, clearly that is a modest sum compared to some current blockbusters, but it is, I think, a good, if not a great number for a quote-unquote little indie film that was produced on a relatively small budget, I think around $5 or $6 million. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to Bernie during the awards season. I really think that Jack Black deserves consideration for a Best Actor nomination, if not an award, from the Independent Spirit Awards and from the Motion Picture Academy, but we'll just see how all that plays out moving forward. All that to say is, if you're in a location where Bernie is still playing, support great indie filmmaking and go see it. And then buy the DVD, because yours truly, like I say, has a little work in it, and I can always use those residuals. Residuals, the discussion of actors' residual income, actually leads into some of what we're discussing in this episode of Actors Talk with my guest, Trish Avery, who is currently serving as the SAG-AFTRA Houston, Texas local executive director. Now, today's episode is one that I've been hoping to do for some time, because today we're going to tackle. Oh boy, somebody can't talk. Today we're going to tackle the subject of the ULB. Many people listening will know what ULB stands for, but since we have listeners literally around the globe, thank you very much. Let me explain that this ULB of which I speak is a low-budget film contract offered to filmmakers by Screen Actors Guild, SAG, we'll refer to them often, and now SAG-AFTRA, but it's offered by Screen Actors Guild. ULB is short for Ultra Low Budget. It is an ultra low-budget agreement, and let's see if I can just get the terms real quickly here. Thumbing through my film contracts digest, the budget maximum is $200,000. The film has to shoot entirely in the United States. Some of the production benefits that are reductions from the full theatrical agreement. There is no consecutive employment. We'll talk about consecutive employment during the podcast. The rates are significantly lower than the full contract rates or even the modified and low budget rates. The rates, minimum rates, they can, of course, be negotiated upward, but minimum rates are $100 a day. They cover only professional performers, which means that if you have non-union actors working alongside union actors under this agreement, they don't necessarily have to get the same pay scale. That, of course, assumes you are not working in a right-to-work state. Right-to-work laws typically would require that all actors, union or non-union, receive the same pay scale. Just to clarify, there are reduced overtime rates and there is a six-day work week. Those are the high points. And a lot of people listening to this will be interested in making films for less than $200,000. So that's why I wanted to talk about the ultra-low budget agreement. And also because I see a lot of erroneous information out there, quote unquote, on the internet. And a lot of it is based on old information or outmoded agreements, some of which no longer even exist, like the SAG experimental film agreement. And so I thought it would be beneficial to have Trish on. Trish is an old friend and someone I've known for a long time and work with in SAG-AFTRA issues, to have her on to help talk about some of these issues. Let's be clear, I am not a disinterested third party when it comes to advising low-budget producers to become signatory to the SAG-AFTRA agreements. And as a longtime member of SAG and AFTRA, and of course now the merged union SAG-AFTRA, I want more producers to avail themselves of these agreements because I want to work in some of those productions. That's just a no-brainer, right? In this episode, you're going to hear discussion of some specifics about the ultra-low-budget agreement. You'll hear terms discussed such as distribution assumption agreement, residuals, consecutive employment. We'll discuss how SAG-AFTRA merger has or has not affected existing contracts and other issues. So without further delay, hope you enjoy the interview, and we'll be back to make a few comments following this interview with Trish Avery. Trish?
Hey.
Hey, it's Tommy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Boy, you're right on time, aren't you?
Well, I try to be. I don't want to get penalized.
No penalties here.
I'm talking with Trish Avery from SAG-AFTRA, and Trish and I have known each other for a long time. Trish, could you just give a little bit of your background, though, as an actor and as someone who has worked with SAG and now SAG-AFTRA for a number of years?
Actually, Tommy, I started my career in the 80s, and I've spent my whole career here in Texas. But I began as an actor. I was trained as an actor and did most of my work in the commercial and what used to be called the industrial. It's now called the corporate educational field. Did a lot of voiceover at that time. And some years back, actually five to be exact, I was asked by Linda Dowell at the SAG, then SAG office, to come on board as staff. I am now the executive director for the Houston local of the newly merged SAG-AFTRA, and happy to represent the thousands of actors in Texas.
Do we know how many actors there are who consider themselves professionals? Do we have any handle on that at all in Texas, whether they're SAG-AFTRA members or not?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, if you ask people who are working with the Actors Online Services, those numbers go up into the thousands. I can only tell you from SAG-AFTRA that our local in Dallas and local in Houston, which represents all of Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, represents over 2,000 people. We have quite a few and have in the past year or two who are leaving other markets to come to the Texas and more healthy markets that are regional.
Another organization that you're heavily involved with, I know, is the TXMPA. Before we get into the SAG-specific things and contract issues, can you tell us what TXMPA is and what their mission is and why they are an important organization for actors in Texas in particular to be aware of? Now, people outside the state and in the country won't know what that is. So what is TXMPA and what do they do?
Well, TXMPA stands for the Texas Motion Picture Alliance, and that is an advocacy group of everyone in our industry, from performers to producers, executive producers, writers, directors, our friends in IA, crew, all of that industry gathered together in one voice to work on legislation statewide to enhance the ability for not only our creatives to work in the state, develop work, but to entice work to come to the state. We now see more than 44 states with incentive packages, so it's become quite a way for our industry to grow. Texas is unique in its incentive package. It's called the Moving Image Incentive Package. It covers more than just film and television. It covers commercial work and video gaming. These are large markets. that we see that are growing and expanding. And I believe Texas was conservative in its approach, but very smart to diversify in that way. I sit on that board of directors and invite anyone who happens to be a part of our industry or is interested in our industry to become a member of TXMPA or learn more about our industry.
Now, how would they do that? How would you become a member of TXMPA?
You know, I'm going to send you right to the website, which is txmpa.org. That's where you'll get your news. That's where you can sign up for our newsletters. But most importantly, if you are in this industry, in this state, it's important that you not only put out your words of support, but also support financially this organization who is working hard and spends all of its money that it earns towards advocacy of our incentive package.
I appreciate your work on that.
Let me share one other thing with you. There is a mixer, a mix and mingle luau, on the evening of July the 7th at the Omni South Park, being hosted by SAG-AFTRA. It's important if you are in the industry to be in that room. One of the things about these advocacy groups that bring all of these organizations and groups of people and workers together is the opportunity to get to know one another and get to know who the creatives are in your area. So if you have any interest in being a part of this industry, that's a room that you want to be in.
Very good. Trish, what the heck is SAG? What is Screen Actors Guild?
Well, Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, which is the American Federation of Television Radio Artists, are legacy organizations for performers and actors that have been around for decades and newly merged a little over 3 months now. These are two organizations with long histories and that are coming together. Now we have over 165,000 professional performers across the nation. And our performers are actors who work worldwide, who set standards about how the work will happen in film, in television, in corporate educational work, in commercial work, in video gaming, in interactive, in music videos. We have a number of contracts, both Legacy SAG and Legacy AFTRA, that our performers work under. And wherever you find a professional creative, you're going to find SAG-AFTRA.
Well, I want to talk about some of those contracts in a second, but the reason I ask what seems to be a really dumb question, what is Screen Actors Guild or what is SAG-AFTRA, is that a lot of times when I hear SAG discussed on the internet, people think that SAG is this monolithic entity. Screen Actors Guild is actors, right?
You're absolutely right. SAG is not a building. It is not staff. It is actually the members. And it's the members of 165,000 professional performers. It is truly a democratic organization for people to really help not only promote the industry, but to solidify who they are as performers. So yes, it is the members.
How does SAG carry on with operations that it needs to do? Does it take fees from producers?
The organization is run on dues and initiation fees. That is how this organization is run. The monies that are collected from producers are paid to the actor as salaries. They are being employed as employees.
Ah, okay. I think that's simple. That's the way I understand it. But a lot of the conversation I read, particularly on the internet and in different independent film forums, would lead one to believe that that's not the case, that somehow SAG makes money and collects money and keeps money for itself, for its own purposes, and that money is not brought in through salaries and then distributed back out to the actors after it's collected. So I think that's important to know that there's not this money that's being collected by SAG other than from its own members.
And there may be some confusion because producers, when they set up a project, tell us what their budgets are going to be, how many days they anticipate employing actors, how many days they anticipate working that particular actor. And SAG-AFTRA will actually ask for a security deposit for that particular project. And that security deposit is held in escrow on that production until the production is completed, and those funds are then returned to the producer.
Now, why is that necessary?
Well, it's become necessary because we know that at some times in a project may run into some trouble that they hadn't anticipated, and monies are not forthcoming in paying actors. So if a production defaults, then we have the deposit, the security deposit, to be able to pay the actors who've already worked for the work that they've incurred.
So if there was not that deposit, the risk would be that if the production went belly up or if the producer just decided not to pay, the actors would have worked but not been paid for that work. And so this is a guarantee that they will be paid for work performed, right? Is that the idea?
That is exactly the idea, a fund for which the actor can come and get payment for a defaulted production.
Okay. I'm going to go into some questions now that came in to me and some that I've picked up from other venues on the internet. I have questions, Tommy. To maintain SAG-AFTRA membership, does an actor have to perform in a certain number of SAG-AFTRA projects each year?
No, Tommy, you don't. There is no limitation on the amount of work that you need to do within a year to maintain your SAG-AFTRA membership. Certainly, once you have become a member and you pay your dues on time, your membership stays active.
How do you become a member?
Well, you must become eligible, and there are a couple of ways of doing that. One day's work as a principal, and a principal performer means that you've had a spoken line and been directed, will get you eligibility. In some markets, you can spend 3 days as an extra and get what are called extra vouchers, and that will give you eligibility. In Texas, we do not cover extras in television and theatrical film, so it's a little more difficult for someone to get their eligibility through doing extra work that way. We do cover extras in commercials, however. So it varies from market to market, and the best solution is for a performer, wherever they are, to call their local office and ask for the specifics about eligibility in that market. But generally, it's 1 day as a principal performer gives you the eligibility. And once you have that eligibility and we've been notified of your work, you will receive a letter of invitation to join.
Okay, now does that go for any SAG-AFTRA contract that you would work under? Are there certain contracts that do not carry the gateway to membership?
A good question, Tommy. There are some of our lower budget agreements, like the ultra low or short or student film, where you cannot get that eligibility.
Why would you not be eligible? I mean, it's a SAG contract. Why shouldn't I, if I were a non-union actor, why wouldn't I be eligible when working under one of those agreements?
Well, those agreements are specifically designed for professionals to work with upcoming and new producers and directors. And it's not seen at level of our modified, low, and full theatrical rates. So that's what you would need, at least a modified and up, in order to become eligible in film. If it's a TV show, you're going to have a particular rate. A 1 day as a principal would give you eligibility there. New media contracts, you could get eligibility. And, of course, corporate educational and commercial work will give you that eligibility, too. It's just the lower budgeted films in which you cannot get.
Right. I did have a question from someone who said, as an actor interested in joining SAG, but only having been cast in ultra-low budget films, are there any new or easier ways to become SAG or now SAG-AFTRA eligible? With the merger, will there be any changes to the membership requirements or a way to gain membership in the merged union SAG-AFTRA?
Actually, SAG-AFTRA has the same eligibility requirements as Legacy SAG, which requires the 1 day principal or 3 day voucher for background. The recommendation I would have for someone who continues to work ultra low is if they are represented to talk to their agent about getting a higher level exposure to work under contract that would give them the eligibility. A new media agreement is one that is quite popular. And they might have the ability to gain work under the new media contract and gain eligibility that way. Commercial work, of course, and corporate educational sometimes is a little simpler to gain that eligibility than full theatrical.
What is this new media agreement?
Well, that is one of the newer contracts that we have, and that is specifically designed for entertainment content that goes to the internet. It is a contract developed for our members to work for projects that are entertainment only, not commercial, but are designed to go and be distributed on the internet, such as a web series.
Now, just clarify, because you said for entertainment only, not commercial. When you say commercial, do you mean commercial as in an ad, or do you mean commercial as in there will be income generated by this project?
No, let me be clear. I was thinking of commercial as in an ad and advertising. Many web series, some are pay, some are free, and certainly that kind of distribution model is acceptable. But our new media agreement is for scripted entertainment only.
Okay. And as of right now, this may change, of course, and that'll lead to another question in just a moment. But as of now, I believe that what an actor will work for in a new media agreement, that's negotiable between the actor and the producer. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So that makes it a very beneficial contract for both actors and producers, because it's fully negotiable in terms of the rate at this time. And for an actor looking to become a SAG-AFTRA member, the new media agreement does qualify as a gateway contract for membership. Is that correct?
Well, it certainly is an opportunity for those who are looking for eligibility to work with producers. And there are some limitations on the new media agreement. Of course, this has to be a SAG-AFTRA agreement, and it must employ SAG-AFTRA members.
Right.
But once that requirement has been established, then there's the ability for a producer to put someone who is not SAG-AFTRA under contract and gain eligibility.
Well, what about some of these lower budget agreements, the ultra low budget, the new media agreement? What if I am a producer and I have non-union actors that I want to cast? Are they going to have to join SAG or SAG-AFTRA, or can I employ both SAG-AFTRA members and non-union members under some of these agreements?
Well, certainly the right to work laws allow you to have members who work with non-members under our contracts. And in other markets, you may find that someone has decided to put a non-member under a contract, and they would become what is called a must-join. Working in right-to-work states presents the opportunity for non-union to be put under a union contract, just in the markets where the union secures states as well. But the eligibility requirement can be met sometimes a little bit easier in right-to-work states.
Right, but under the, for instance, the ultra-low budget agreement, not everyone would have to be covered under the agreement, is that right?
Or you're right. No, Tommy, you're right. And in the short and student and ultra low agreements, the producer need only cover professionals under those contracts. So the opportunity to have only members covered by contract in the ultra low, student and short is there. They need not cover a non-union person working on the same project.
Okay, you've mentioned the term legacy contracts, or legacy SAG, legacy AFTRA several times. I've had a number of questions from people saying, well, what about contracts now? When do these contracts expire? What am I going to get in trouble somehow? Trouble meaning, am I going to run into any snags if I start a production now today under a SAG agreement that's somehow not going to be enforced because of the merger? What's the situation with the merger vis-a-vis existing contracts?
Well, because the contracts are existing and have their own expiration dates, they will continue until they expire and or are renegotiated. So I don't believe a producer will run into any snags, because those contracts and their determining factors are listed and well known. Certainly a great resource for any producer would be our production center. They can see the rates, the terms of each contract. And I would advise any producer who has a question about an upcoming project, deadline for negotiations, to give our offices a call. We can certainly enlighten them should they have any questions.
Okay, great. Here's another question from a producer director. So far, I've done one feature and one short under SAG contracts. So here are some questions based on my experience, he says. Are there any resources to keep up with current percentages for paying out royalties, and I assume he means residuals, from projects? And how often do you need to send the money to SAG? How would a producer keep up with what percentages are necessary to pay for residuals and to just technically know how to take care of making those payments? I see a lot of producers who are worried about paperwork and about just keeping up with payments of residuals to actors.
It can be overwhelming from a producer's viewpoint, certainly from a director's viewpoint, when your focus has been on the creative side of show business and not so much on the business side, but it truly is a business. And at the end product, you have a product that you want to successfully market and make money from, or at least have some exposure to get the chance to do the next project. Of residuals, which I believe is, you're right, in the question about royalties really means residual. There's a wonderful handbook for film producers that's put out by SAG Indie. Go to sagindie.com and you'll be able to see each of those. It lists the individual exhibition residuals, and this is after you have a distribution agreement and that it's being distributed in other markets. Just for example, to sell a DVD of your Ultra Low after you have had your initial release and you are ready to sell DVDs, the percentage of residuals would be 4.5%. Now, when you see that as a producer, you think, am I spending 4.5% on each performer? And the answer is no. Residuals would be 4.5% of the distributor's gross receipts of the DGR. And that would be figured for the whole cast, that 4.5%. So those numbers are actually tied to each contract or individual to each contract. And again, if you have a question, feel free to give our office a call. We can actually help you determine what is due at the time of distribution. We also have a residuals hotline in case you want to talk to them specifically. And let me give that number to you.
Okay, and I'll put that in the show notes too, but go ahead and give that number.
Sure. It's 800-205-7716. A producer who has released their product would have residuals due within the first 6 months of a distribution. And then payments of residuals need to be made quarterly to SAG after.
That may be cumbersome enough for some people, but it's not as if they need to make a monthly payment to 16 different actors, you know, of a percentage of whatever their gross receipts are from that project. So it's I think the important things are, and I did see some misunderstanding on this. Some people were thinking that this percentage, whatever it is, would go to each actor, and that is decidedly not the case. It's a pool of money that's split up among the actors, and so it's
that's correct. The check would actually be written to SAG-AFTRA. There is a form that you would turn in with that residuals check, and SAG-AFTRA would distribute the money.
Okay, so the producer doesn't have to write 27 different checks.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Because I think one of the things people are worried about is paperwork, and that's understandable because a lot of these low budget producers are wearing a lot of different hats, and you know, one more bit of paperwork to keep up with is just one more thing that they say, well, I don't want to do that. I think a lot of these things could be taken care of if someone has the budget by using a payroll company. Don't payroll companies assist people in complying with SAG rules and making payroll distributions and that sort of thing? I mean, isn't that what they're in existence for, so that the independent producer doesn't have to do all of that stuff him or herself?
Tommy, I think you've hit upon the best kept secret for producers, and that is have a payroll company as part of your team. Because once you employ SAG-AFTRA members under a contract, what you're doing is employing employees, and that requires withholding to come out of each check. Oftentimes, a payroll company can provide that service. They can provide additional services. Sometimes payroll companies offer, for a small fee, some insurance that might be able to get for a little less money than you would if you go out on your own. But certainly, payroll companies can help with the payroll itself from week to week, but also help you keep up with the percentages that are due.
Right. Okay, let's get to one of the big what I think is a misunderstanding. Maybe it's not. You'll tell me. Is it a misunderstanding to think that if a person produces a film under the SAG ultra low budget agreement, they have no right to sell that film and to recoup their production costs in the marketplace? It can only be done through a theatrical distribution, and they have no other right to sell that film. Is that correct? Because I see that a lot as an assumption about working with the ultra low budget agreement.
That is not correct.
What?
Yes, that is not correct. Let me
read. But I read it on the internet. It's, you know.
Yes, and they're selling a lot of things on the internet these days, aren't they?
So how does, I mean, there? It does seem that the wording in the contract is somewhat confusing, because in one place it does say, you know, seem to say that there's a very limited number of things that one can do with a project under the ultra low budget agreement. You know, the wording, I think, it says it's not intended for pictures produced for television, broadcast, cable use, video, DVD, or otherwise produced primarily for commercial exploitation. And a lot of people read that, and there's a particular website that I'm not going to refer to here, but people who are listening to this and know that quote know it well, and they consider that as gospel. And that after that one phrase that's in the contract, the translation in this on this person's website is, okay, go ahead and make your movie, but you're not supposed to sell it. Is that right? Why would anybody do that?
Well, that's a good question, but that's not the case here.
Okay.
Certainly a producer who's working under the ultra low budget agreement has the right to accept a distribution agreement with someone to sell DVD or have it broadcast on television. I think the hang-up is the wording in the contract that can be misunderstood, because it says it is not intended for pictures produced for those markets that you spoke of. But the actionable word here is primarily. So the ultra low is actually designed for theatrical release or film festivals. Once that has been accomplished, the producer has the right to distribute their product however they see fit. The important part for an ultra-low producer in today's market is getting the distribution assumption agreement signed. And that is a SAG form that we have. Many distributors know about the distribution agreement, but it is the actual legal document that says that producer still holds that project, is the primary person that we would come back to for securing residuals. And that piece of paper often producers miss when they work on their distribution agreements with distributors in releasing to DVD or television or supported streaming, however they prefer to distribute. But yes, absolutely, an ultra-low producer can actually market their product and have it distributed through all of those mechanisms that you see.
Okay, so that makes more sense, because, I mean, that it didn't make any sense to me personally, because in Texas, we're doing a lot of projects in this state that are done under the ultra-low budget agreement. Now, I'm trying to figure out if nobody can monetize these films, if nobody can do anything with the film after it's made, why are so many people producing films under the ultra low budget agreement? It doesn't make any sense. So certainly they must know something that I misunderstood from everything I'm reading online, that, well, if you make a film under the ultra low budget agreement, there's just nothing you can do with it. Consider it a loss leader or a good experience, but that's it. And what you're saying is that's not true.
Yes, the term initial release is important.
Okay.
You have to release it.
All right.
So how are you releasing it? And then once that happens, then your distribution model can be up to you and the distributor that you work an agreement with. I think some of the information that you see out on the internet probably refers to a very old agreement back in the 90s called the experimental agreement, and it doesn't cross over to the ultra low anymore.
You know, this is a very, very good point, Trish. I mean, it's something I meant to bring up, and I'm glad you reminded me, is that these things that get put up on the internet live forever. Even once the agreements may have addressed some issues that people had problems with in the past, and people are going back sometimes 10 or 15 years to find comments about an older agreement that no longer even exists, and they think that that's the way it is. So I think What I would tell people is it's incumbent upon you to find the most current information. And if you still don't want to work, you know, under a SAG agreement, okay, then don't do it. But at least don't cut yourself out of the possibility of using SAG actors in your project because you're reading information that is woefully outdated and inaccurate. So that's my speech on that. From a beginning low-budget producer, is it true that an actor is allowed to just completely walk away from my production if he finds something better? This is an actor who's working under an ultra-low-budget agreement, specifically was his question. Can I, if I'm working on his project and I get a better offer, can I just not show up tomorrow, even though I've already been shooting 2 or 3 days on his production? Does SAG back me up in that?
Well, the ultra low budget agreement has a waiver of consecutive employment, which means that if they're not working you on a particular day and have not paid you for that day, you can accept other work. It's important that you give the 36 hours notice to the producer that you've accepted other work. But there are ultra-low budget producers who feel it important to hold on to a particular performer and make sure that they are not securing work elsewhere, and they will go ahead and pay that $100 a day for the day that the performer is not working, just to make sure that the performer is available to them to finish their ultra-low
budget. Okay, you know, it hadn't even occurred to me that that question really was related to consecutive employment. I think what you said about that is probably where this misunderstanding comes from. So the idea is that if you hire me for a week, then I work Monday and Tuesday, but you tell me Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I'm going to be off, but I need you again Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Under the ultra low budget agreement, and forget about the days of the week I just named, under the ultra low budget agreement, you would not have to pay me for those days off that I had. Whereas under some other agreements, you would. So theoretically, if I, as the actor, had 3 days off, I'm available to take other work during those days off. So, I mean, and that's understandable, but that's something any professional actor is going to work out with the producer and the director of the project they're working on. Currently, I don't think a professional actor would ever just walk away from a production. They would try to work something out. So,
I would hope so, that they would give the producer enough leeway, as we say, 36 hours before they commit to another. But understand that from a working actor's point of view, working an ultra low is already a significant cut from the $842 a day that they would get under a full feature film to $100 a day.
Right.
And you're right. Consecutive employment refers to the producer in the higher budget agreements that is paying for the days not worked. If they're working an actor on Monday and Wednesday, that producer would be paying for Tuesday as well to keep that actor employed.
And on the ultra low budget, they get a break and they don't have to make that payment. That's all.
Yes.
But it's, and that's where it would come down to casting, I think. And casting someone that you think you can rely on, you believe you can rely on, who is not going to just bolt from your production. And again, I've heard many more stories on non-union films where actors get disgruntled because things aren't going well or whatever, and they just say, I'm out of here. You know, you're not paying me anything or not enough, and I don't like the way things are going, so see ya. You know, I think that's much more likely to happen from that type of a situation that it is from a SAG actor ever walking off a production. And here's a question. I don't know if you can answer this either. Maybe this is beyond your realm of expertise. Do I really have to have workers' compensation insurance, public liability insurance, and public disability insurance under the ULB?
Well, under our contracts, the public liability is required. There are many packages or many insurance companies who package all three together to kind of reduce the rates. It depends on which state you're working in. Texas does not require workers' compensation. But I do know that some payroll companies can offer those insurance packages at a reduced rate than you might get otherwise as an individual producer. So the only insurance that we absolutely require under our contract would be the public liability. The others would depend on the state requirements. I would hesitate to ask any producer not to get insurance. I think it's in their best interest to make sure that they are covered under any kind of circumstances. And you would be surprised how many circumstances happen when you think, oh, this is going to be a simple shoot. and I don't have any stunts, and I know the location, but accidents do happen. They happen not only with performers, but with crew. And I think it's really important for any producer, any CEO will tell you the importance of being prudent with your business decisions.
And we'll wind this down, but here's a question, and I hope maybe you can answer this. It was a question from a producer. Has anyone worked a SAG ultra-low budget for a feature film? I have heard that if the film you make under this contract is successful and makes any money, SAG will demand quote-unquote step payments for the SAG actors under the ultra-low budget agreement. I think there's wording in the agreement that says there are no step-up fees, but I may be wrong about that.
No, you're right. There are no step-up fees for the ultra-low agreement. What can happen, however, is if a production says, and the ultra-low only covers productions up to a total budget of $200,000. So if a project goes into production and they say, well, you know, my production is under the $200,000 level, not a problem, but in the course of production and or release, discover that it's over $200,000. They've reached their threshold and now they're beyond the ultra low budget agreement level. A step up payment would be due because they would move up to a different contract.
Okay, but that would be a budgetary consideration, not a consideration of that the film has somehow, let's say it got successful at a film festival and picked up a distributor. It doesn't necessarily mean they automatically get bumped up to a full theatrical agreement requirement or something like that.
That's
right?
Correct. You won't see that.
Right. Okay. Were there any high points of maybe the ultra low budget agreement that you wanted to talk about that we haven't touched on tonight? I mean, I've sort of covered most of the questions that came in through my request for questions on the internet, but
Well, I appreciate the questions, and I appreciate the conversation that you allow producers and performers to ask through your podcast. I think it's a wonderful discussion. The only thing that I would like to point out to producers who are considering their next project on whether or not to use a SAG-AFTRA contract, this is a discussion that I had with an executive producer in a full theatrical at one time on the importance of working as a first-time producer. And he was talking to me about the pressure that is on a new producer, a young producer and director to really just get this floating factory done, to move it from location, to run into unexpected weather or unexpected location challenges that were not anticipated, no matter how much pre-production you do. And he was talking about the importance of working with professionals in that environment, because we know that the creative process is synergistic. And if a producer's and director's energies are being put into trying to get a performance out of a novice actor, then they lose the ability to handle whatever the next challenge might be, whether it's from an actor point of view or crew or location or whatever. So using SAG-AFTRA members will allow that creative process to really blossom, for the director to have the ability to maybe lean on a performer for that unspoken communication to deliver a product that they hadn't anticipated, and find those synergistic moments to make something creative that everyone is looking for and is sometimes very rare and hard to achieve if you don't have the right people around you.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, and no one's going to make the case that there aren't some really fine actors who are not members of SAG-AFTRA, or at least not yet. We all know that's not true. There are some really good actors who are non-union actors, and hopefully they will be at some point. But we also know that the vast majority, or I believe the vast majority of SAG-AFTRA member actors are experienced and professional and take the work seriously as a business, and they're going to deliver, I think, more so than people who haven't had those kinds of experiences. Trish, I want to thank you so much, but maybe we could do this again sometime, and I'm sure I'll probably get some reaction and people saying, well, why didn't you ask this or that? I hope to get some of those kinds of responses to ask some future questions. I do appreciate you taking your time to clear up some of these things. I think the main thing I wanted to clear up and that we have answered is that, yes, you can monetize your project if it's done under a SAG ultra low budget agreement. Oh, I just remembered the other question I wanted to ask. Okay. Is SAG really hardcore and difficult with people on determining what kind of theater they can release their ultra low budget project in? I mean, is that a real battle, or are there only two theaters in the country where they can release them, or how does that work?
No, it doesn't require an ARP house release, or there's no requirement on the number of seats that you have in the house. Now, the important thing is that you have a theatrical release of some sort. I hope that the people who are listening to your podcast understand that we at SAG-AFTRA want to help you to discover what the best contract is for your particular project and how we can help you be successful in making that project marketable.
Okay, Trish, I'm going to let you go. We're almost at an hour. I keep saying I'm going to let you go, but now I really am. Thank you so much, Trish Avery from SAG-AFTRA. It's been very informative, and I really appreciate it, and I hope maybe we can do this on another occasion.
Anytime.
All right, thanks, Trish. Take care.
Bye.
Take care. God bless. All right, thank you so much to my friend, a colleague, and a terrific advocate for actors in the state of Texas, for sure, Trish Avery. Thanks, Trish. Appreciate all you've done to make this podcast a reality. I appreciate your time very, very much. I think there may be questions or comments that people will have following some of the things we discussed about. At least I hope so. And I want you to be sure and use that 800 line that's at the top of the website, or use the comment boxes at the bottom of the website under the show notes. Let me hear from you. If you need clarification about an issue or whatever, let me hear about it. And we'll discuss those things on an upcoming episode, or prior to beginning an upcoming episode. I want some feedback and some comments about these issues. I know that you have additional questions. So thanks again, Trish. Really, really appreciate you being on the episode tonight. Hey, I almost forgot. I want to thank previous interviewee, Matt Thompson, who was director-producer of Unraveled, a short film we shot earlier this year under the SAG short film agreement, I might add. And we received a Best Actor nomination for that project from the Gideon Media Arts Conference and Film Festival this week. So congratulations to Matt and everyone who had a hand in making Unraveled. Thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun, and I appreciate the film getting noticed in that way. So that's terrific. So thanks, Matt Thompson, and the cast and crew of Unraveled. Pretty cool. So that's it. Until next time, as always, I hope to see you in the movies. Get out there and see Bernie. Give me some residuals coming in. I can use that. Until next time, God bless you. This is Tommy G. Kendrick. So long. That's a wrap for episode 18.